weeknights from 6
on 2FM. Big thanks to Two Johnnies and Afric. It's Thursday the 16th of May and you're listening to Game On. Coming up today, we've soccer, rugby and US sport. Alan Cawley, Bernard Jackman and Jeff Shepherd are with us. Plus, we're live to Greg Allen in Kentucky for the opening day of the PGA Championship. If you'd like to get in touch, you can text us as always on 51552. We're on X at Game On 2FM or you can WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200.
Game On 2FM.
Alan Cawley is with me in studio. Alan, you're enjoying the shorts weather?
Do I look good?
You love to wear, you love any excuse to wear the pair of shorts.
Absolutely. Well, the weather's lovely, to be fair. Absolutely gorgeous. So hopefully it carries on into the weekend, Marie. We're down in Sligo tomorrow for the live game, Bohemians and Sligo Rovers. And considering it's such a big day in the League of Ireland, everybody's excited about what's to come over the next few days, I'd say, in the league.
Yeah, it's got really, really interesting. And we'll be talking about that Stephen Kenny appointment in just a while. We're going to go straight to golf, though. We're going to go to the Valhalla Golf Club, where the PGA Championship is well underway. And Greg Allen is there for us. Greg, how are things?
Yeah, very hot scoring here. That's one thing about today. It's not too hot here by any means, because of course this PGA Championship, which used to be held in August, up to around 5 years ago, now being held in May, so much more tolerable temperatures here. The scoring, though, is really, really hot, which I suppose indicates to some degree that although you can set up a golf course for a major championship, these players are just good. And if the rough isn't really, really rough, and it's not really rough here, they are going to have an absolute field day at times, especially, of course, when you have the talent in your fingers that Xander Schauffele has right at the moment. Because the world number three last week, he started with a round of 64 in the Wells Fargo Championship. Now, he eventually got run down, so to speak, by an extraordinary performance by Rory McIlroy on Sunday. But at the moment, Xander Schauffele is doing something similar to what he did last week. He's at the moment 9 under par for his round. If he gets in on 9 under par, par is the last hole, he'll shoot a round of 62. And Schauffele, unquestionably at the moment, is one of the form players in the game. He's had a very consistent year, but he still hasn't won on tour in 2 years. So Schauffele, though, has a distinct lead of 3 shots over Tony Finau, who's just birdied his 13th hole of the day. Finau has moved to 6 under par. And then the very popular Scot is Bob McIntyre on 5 under par, who has just been joined at this particular moment by Rory McIlroy, who is now just birdied, as I'm speaking, his 16th hole of the day, the par 5 7th hole. He started on the 10th tee. That's a run of 3 birdies in a row for McIlroy, and McIlroy now right in contention, 4 off the lead, tied for third. So it's been an interesting day for McIlroy insofar as that he brought this extraordinary form from last week at Wells Fargo, where really his round of 65 in the final round could easily have been 63. He double bogeyed the last one, all the pressure was off, and it did look like complete vintage McIlroy. And here he started with 2 birdies in the first 4 holes. It looked like he was continuing on from that, but then he went through a bit of a flat spot and even hit the ball into the water on the 18th, the par 5, which was his 9th hole of the day. Things could have got very flat if he hadn't saved par there from just over 100 yards. His wedge play today has been really, really solid. He had a wedge shot to 7 feet, hold the putt, save par on that par 5, 18th, his 9th hole of the day. And then on the 10th, his next hole, he hit the flagstick from 165 yards from the rough on the right-hand side, and that seemed to really kick-start his round, because since then, he then birdied his 14th hole. That was from 7 feet. His 15th hole, where he chipped in from around 25 yards. And then, just a moment ago, he's birdied 7. So McIlroy absolutely on the run again, similar to what we saw in Wells Fargo, 5 under par. This is a major championship. This is 10 years since he's won a major championship. It was at this venue 10 years ago that he won his last major. He himself said after Wells Fargo that maybe stars are aligning, and you know, then he kind of rode back in that a little bit yesterday in the press conference, not wanting to make himself a hostage to fortune. But at the moment, he is playing like someone who can challenge on Sunday. But Schauffele at the moment 9 under par, with 1 hole to play after 17, is the leader on 9 under, 1 clear of Tony Finau on 6 under. McIlroy and Bob McIntyre, his fellow Ryder Cup player. McIlroy and McIntyre played in that team that beat the Americans in Rome last September, October, and they are tied for third place, McIlroy and McIntyre on 5 under par. Incidentally, Cam Smith from the Live Series, he's in the group on 3 under, as is Jordan Spieth, and Spieth is now playing his 16th hole of the day. And Spieth is one of the players who could actually win the career Grand Slam this year. If he wins this week, Jordan Spieth would have won all of the major championships in his career. And Jordan Spieth, at 30 years of age, 3 under par, is right there. But he's 6 off the lead. But he's tied for 6th place, and there's a long, long, long way to go here. Shane Lowry will tee off at about 6:30, about 20 minutes from now. And Paddy Carrington out pretty late at 7:45 Irish time.
So, Greg, out of who you've seen so far today, who has impressed you the most?
Schauffele is in a vein of form at the moment. The question about Schauffele is, does he keep the form going right until Sunday afternoon on the back nine? There is a reason why he hasn't won in 2 years. There seems to be a small block, whether it's in his psyche or whether it's just something that gets in you at times. When you get a chance to win and you've played well all week, you carry a lot of pressure when you start as well as he has started last week and obviously this week. And he'll carry that pressure now with what looks like a round of 62. And maybe 63 if he, I'm not sure, he's on his 18th green at the moment now with a putt of around 30 feet. And Schauffele could well get in with a round of 62. If he does, yeah, in fact, his putt here on the 18th is for birdie. So if he holds this, it's a 61. If he misses it and taps in, it's a 62. Whatever, it's another stunning start by Xander Schauffele, who's on 9 under par, leading the field by 3 shots. For now, in second place on 6 under, McIlroy and McIntyre in the group tied for third place on 5 under.
Greg, you mentioned earlier he hasn't won on tour in 2 years. Would it even be more of a concern that he's never won a major?
You know, I think you've got to... Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, possibly you need to be... If you're finding difficulty winning an ordinary PGA Tour event, what happens when the pressure is ramped up for a major? Incidentally, he's put it up to 3 feet, so it's likely he'll tap that in for around a 62. But how many times can you go to the well, start this well, and then not finish it off on Sunday? That might get in on him, but at the same time, Xander Schauffele looks like he's going to be figuring here on Sunday, because this is not a coincidence. This is nothing strange. He's been playing like this, or to a level which has been fairly close to this all year, and Xander Schauffele has tapped that in. It is a round of 62, a stunning opening round. It is a major championship record equaling 62. It's only been done once before by Brandon Grace in Royal Birkdale at the Open back in 2017. And that is a major championship record, single round, 62 for Xander Schauffele. That's laying down a marker, and obviously he is the man to beat now.
Okay, Greg, sounds good. We will be talking to you over the next few days. Enjoy it, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much, Greg. We're going to take a very quick break now. Stay with us, though. Alan Cawley will be discussing that big appointment in the League of Ireland, plus the rest of the football news. We've Bernard Jackman on rugby and Jeff Shepherd on all things American sport.
2FM. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Alan Cawley has been waiting very patiently to talk about Stephen Kenny's appointment as the St. Patrick's Athletic manager. He was announced today, a 5-year contract until the end of the 2029 season. So he's taken over from John Daly, who was sacked just over a week ago. He's returning to the club where he started his League of Ireland coaching journey as manager of the Saints under 21 team during the 97-98 season. So lots of history and connection there as well. Alan Cawley, what do you reckon?
Oh, it's massive news, Marie. It really is. Now, we kind of did get whispers of this earlier in the week, and people were suggesting that it was a done deal. I never really believe it's a done deal until it's across the line. And I was a little bit surprised. And the reason being, Marie, I always thought if you're the international manager, no disrespect to the league here, and I love the league, but I would have thought maybe his stock was high enough that he'd probably be looking elsewhere, thinking he may get a job, whether it be League One, League Two in England. He might think championship level, or even in Europe maybe. But I suppose the market is so competitive out there now for managers and getting jobs. And obviously Stephen maybe didn't feel, he's been out of work now, obviously since last September, October. So maybe he wasn't getting those opportunities, we don't know, or he wasn't willing to wait any longer. You'd have to ask him that. So I didn't envisage him coming straight back to the league as soon as he is. But now that he's here and now that it's been announced, I think it's absolutely brilliant for the league in terms of his profile. Obviously the profile of some of the other managers. St. Pat's, I feel as though, are a club who are just kind of getting things right. Gareth Keller, who's obviously invested heavily in them over the years, but certainly off the back of the cup wins and their academy structure and young lads, there's a lot of talk about St. Pat's at the moment, and I think Stephen could be the right man to take them to the next level.
Yeah, and I'd imagine as well there's a philosophy there, there's joined up thinking, it'll be oversight of the academy in a little bit as well, like keeping an eye on what's happening there and then trying to bring it all together and have a really good group of footballers and develop talent as well that they can sell on in time.
Yeah, because you only have to go back to the cup final, and obviously they are developing talent. Mm. There was five or six teenagers played in that team. Of course, Sam Curtis went away at the end of the season.
Made his debut on the weekend.
Young Murphy as well went away. Obviously, Mace Amelia, 16, playing in the first team. So they are doing things right in terms of an academy level. Mm. And if you look at the length of the contract that they've offered Stephen and what he signed up for, 5 years, I don't remember a 5-year deal being handed out to a manager in the League of Ireland ever.
What about players, Al? Do you ever get a 5-year one?
I've never had a 5-year one, Marino. few fellas promised me an extra long one, but they turned their back on me. But no, 5 years is long. So I think that shows the intent from both parties as well. Obviously, we knew that St. Pat's and Gareth Keller, once Stephen was potentially available, that he was going all out to get him. And I think it shows on Stephen's side as well, his commitment to the role, that he's prepared. He spoke about it earlier on, about the plans that Gareth's telling him about, maybe investment from elsewhere coming in as well, the academy structure, as you said, new plans for a stadium potentially as well. So there's lots going on, lots happening. And of course, on the pitch, he was so successful with Dundalk. Brilliant manager. That was why he got the Ireland job in the first place, Marie, all the success that he had here. We know he's a brilliant manager. I know things didn't work out for him, maybe international level, but that's not to say he'll come back here and he won't be any good as what he was at Dundalk. So I'm really excited, especially when you think of the pairings of him against Duff next Monday night, Rory Higgins, Stephen Bradley, just in terms of the exposure and the eyes that are on the league at the moment. And we've mentioned this many times in terms of the attendances and the interest and the hype. And even you look at yesterday, you're talking about the academy structure, Will Clark is in front of the senators yesterday speaking, obviously, about the plans and hoping and praying almost that we get huge investment, that we need to bring the thing on even further. And when you have the likes of Stephen and high profile people like that involved, they have to start supporting this.
Okay, well, let's hear from Stephen Kenny then. He was confirmed today as the St. Patrick's Athletic Manager, and he spoke to Jamie Moore, who is the social media manager, I'm going to give him that title anyway, press officer for St. Pat's. Let's hear from him.
Yeah, it's a bit of a whirlwind in the end, really. Just looking to get started. It's a new chapter in my life and a new chapter for the club. We'll absolutely give it everything.
You've signed a 5.5-year contract to take you to the end of the 2029 season, so a big commitment both ways, yourself to the club and the club to yourself. So you must be really excited now to get the feet under the table and get going.
Yeah, well, Gareth Kelleher has shared his vision for the club for me for a long time, and he has plans for the stadium, tour of America, European progression, and a lot of exciting plans, really. But we're obviously a long way from that at the moment, because we're at the wrong end of the table and we've got some hard work to do. And the reason I signed a longer contract is to build a club over a period of time, and I wish to do that.
Yeah, you've been at a couple of our games recently this season as well. You've been at lots of League of Ireland games over the last number of years too. So you know the players, you know the squad, you know the club. What do you feel you're inheriting here?
Yeah, well, listen, it's a club with a great tradition and great history. And when Gareth came to speak to me, he said he didn't want to be an employee, but to be a partner really in driving the club. And I work better in that kind of environment, and personally I do. And I'm looking forward to driving the club. I think my mother used to come here. She was from Inchicore, lived in Ballyfermot with her dad, and so there's a good connection there. I think it's going to be a tough challenge, because a lot of teams are ahead of us at the moment. We're fourth team in Dublin. Yeah, at the moment, and at the wrong end of the table. So it's a big job to rebuild and drive the club on.
And just lastly, that begins tomorrow, home to Derry City, another home match on Monday against Shelburne, and then a trip to Dalymount for a derby against Bowles. So three games in a week, and you'll be in the dugout tomorrow night, and I'm sure you're excited to get to Richmond and see the home fans and hopefully start with a positive performance.
Yeah, I've never been out of work in 25 years, so bar a couple of months. So I'm used to coaching most days, and it's in your blood, and it's such a busy time now, really, to come in one day before you play Derry and Shelburne on Monday and Bohemians on Friday. So that's what it's about, the passion in the ground and preparing the team, getting ready for that, and we look forward to it.
Stephen Kenny there speaking after his appointment, or his confirmation of his appointment earlier on today. He's got a lot of work to do.
He has, yeah, because you look at, obviously, that's the whole reason why he's in, Marie, because the manager has lost his job, the previous one, John Daly, because results haven't been going their way. They've got off to a a poor start, if you like, considering where they were last year. Obviously qualifying for Europe, winning the cup, everybody thought that themselves and maybe Derry City would be the ones pushing Shamrock Rovers this year. And I'm sure they thought that themselves, but it hasn't panned out that way, hence John Daly losing his job. So he has work to do, but he's plenty of time to do it, I suppose, Marie, in the sense that there's plenty of games left to bounce up the table. And the good thing for him, I suppose, at the moment is that coming in to the league right now, all the teams are so inconsistent, they're all beating each other, so it's not like you're languishing down the bottom and all the other teams are in great form and are out of reach, if you like. A couple of wins will bounce you up the table, as we've seen with Waterford in the last kind of 10 days, three wins on the bounce and to have themselves up to fourth. So I think that's the way he'll be looking. Stephen is always very ambitious and he won't be coming in thinking we can just get into Europe. He'll be still looking thinking we can challenge. That's kind of the mindset that he will have. I think they're well off that, but certainly in terms of building for the future, it's a brilliant appointment, it really is, Marie. Like, when you think of, I suppose, a pedigree of a manager that's out there available to come into your club, they won't get many better than Stephen Kenny.
Yeah.
So it's a big coup for Pats and Gareth Kelleher and all involved, and I hope it works out for them. I think it's brilliant for the league. Obviously I love the league, and to see Stephen back involved raises the profile up another notch, and it's brilliant for us that can talk about it and speak about it and have these kind of games coming up that there's going to be so much interest in.
Who's going to go in with him?
Good question, Marie. The phone is, it's on silent. I'm not sure, was he ringing?
Some step up now from
I'm not leaving here. It is interesting because obviously he always had the partnership with Vinnie Pert at Dundalk, and Vinnie was his right hand man for years at Dundalk, but I think that relationship has been soured since, so I can't see that happening. Stephen Rice is another one that I know obviously was in with the FEI at the moment, Stephen, and is kind of working his way up the coaching ladder, if you like, and gaining experience. And I know Stephen rates Stephen Rice quite highly as well. Yeah. So there could be potential there to bring maybe Stephen. I don't know. Sean O'Connor obviously stood in to the breach for game last week.
Let's throw Keith Tracy on Pat's under 17s manager.
Who knows, Keith?
Right there,
yeah,
look, you never know.
Absolutely. He's too comfy in the studio
as
well.
Yeah, exactly. He's like yourself now.
But it will be interesting to see, because I do think they need to bring someone in. Now, I think Sean O'Connor may stay around because Sean was obviously involved with the academy setup as well, and he knows the landscape of St. Pat's.
Alan Matthews still there.
He's in the background. Yeah. I don't see him getting involved in the coaching side of things, but he certainly is in the background. So I think he probably brings someone in, and it wouldn't surprise me, I'm just throwing that name out, Stephen Rice, because I think he might have been linked with it as well. It wouldn't surprise me if it was Stephen, but I definitely think he'll bring someone in.
It's only a couple of days since, I guess, he's been linked with the job, or since we know that he's been linked. It's just over a week since John Daly left. He's got a run of big games coming. Can you make an impact in a short space of time, Al?
Well, bar Shamrock Rovers, these are the two biggest games coming up tomorrow, Monday. You have Derry City and Shelburne, and the Shelburne game against Duff on Monday night will be absolutely, I'd say the tickets, if they're not sold out already, they'll be like gold dust, because obviously Damien was in with him. Damien's such a high profile in the league as well. People will be wondering what their relationship is like, and they'll be putting two and two together and getting six and seven, but that'll make all for the headlines and the drama, probably.
Bring the popcorn.
But just in terms of, I suppose, the games that he has coming up, they are difficult games, Marie, and whether he can make the impact straight away. But we often see with managers when they come in, they do get a bounce, players, and none more so. If you're a player at St. Pat's right now at this moment in time, and no disrespect to any other manager in the league, bar Duff maybe, but no disrespect, because there's a lot of them are young managers. But if you see Stephen Kenny walking into your dressing room straight away, your head will be turned and you'll be wanting to impress and do everything you can in your power to impress him, because he will have that presence as a League of Ireland kind of brilliant manager. Whereas if it's, again, as I said, no disrespect, if it's a younger manager starting out in his career or trying to carve out his career, who maybe hasn't built up that experience that Stephen has, or the trophy and the silverware that Stephen has built up, you might not look at him in the same way. So I think players right now at this moment in time at Pat's not only will be one hoping to impress, but they'll also be thinking he'll be looking to bring in his own fellas as well and put his own stamp on things. So it might not be all rosy in the garden for the players that are there at the moment either.
Isn't it brilliant for young players like Mason Melia, 16 years of age, to be playing under somebody that was managing internationally just a few months ago?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant, Marie. And that's where there'll be such a buzz and excitement for the likes of those young lads who were only kind of starting off in their career. But Stephen will be fully aware of all these lads as well. And you only have to watch his performance last Friday night against Shamrock Rovers. And I know there's been a lot of talk about young Melia, and sometimes I find with the young lads, you don't want to pin too much pressure on them. We've seen that at the highest level with Evan Ferguson all season. People, I feel, putting too much pressure on him. So at a lesser level, this is Mason in our league. And again, I don't want people to be putting too much pressure on him, but if he keeps putting in the performances that he did last Friday night against Shamrock Rovers, I think that just, it goes hand in hand, the expectation and the hype. But I think Stephen, certainly in terms of a manager who likes to work with young players and who has brought on young players in the past, it can only be a good thing for all those young lads of Pats, and particularly Melia.
So are you going to be going to all the Pats games now, Al?
I'm not sure, no. I'll still hover around them all, Marie, and you have to dip the toes into them all, yeah. But it does. It absolutely puts an extra interest on St. Pat's
does,
at the
yeah.
moment, because I suppose at the moment, Damien Duff is getting all the attention. I go down to Daly Mount a lot. You're up to Tala to watch, obviously, the champions and how they're getting on. But certainly in terms of St. Pat's, and that's no disrespect to them. Stephen mentioned it there in his interview that they're the fourth team in Dublin at the moment. He won't like that. So all the other teams are kind of ahead of him in the pecking order at the moment. So that's why maybe all eyes weren't on Pat's as much as the other clubs. Whereas now with him coming in the door, there's extra eyes now at this moment in time and going forward, because he is, it's a massive coup. When I heard the news today, even because I didn't think it would happen, Marie.
Yeah, I thought something was going to
happen. And for the reason that I started the chat with, just when you go from the Ireland manager, I would have thought there would have been something in between, potentially two or three jobs in between, and then you come back here. And again, as I said, that's no disrespect to the league, but your stock is very high if you're managing at international level, that you'd like to think you'd be able to bounce down to maybe a club in Europe, or as I said, League One, League Two, even Championship, whatever. But the fact that he's come straight back here leads me to believe maybe the opportunities weren't there. It is a very competitive market. There's people desperate for jobs left, right and centre in England, and it's such a cutthroat industry as well. But now that he is here, I think it's brilliant for the league and all of us involved.
Yeah, and for him as well, because like,
and it's nice to see him. He mentioned as well he's never been out of work bar a couple of months, so he loves it. Stephen loves it, and he loves the league as well, Marie.
Sure, he's a fan, he's always at games.
Yeah, dare you, he loves it, and that's what like
and he's a young lad coming through too, and league,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like there's loads
playing at Dundalk.
Yeah,
so it'll be interesting. Could be his first signing.
Right, we're going to leave the Stephen Kenny chat there for now, but of course we will be keeping an eye on everything that happens with him at the Derry City game, and of course that big one on Monday as well against Shells. But just a word on Celtic and Adam Ida and them getting the title, and I think for Ireland football fans, people will be delighted to see Adam Ida having a bit of a moment, because there was a bit of negativity around him when he signed and it took him a while to win the fans over, but he's very much now turning into fans, if not already a fans favourite.
Yeah, absolutely, Marie. It was great to see those scenes last night with him, and as you say, it was probably a sticky start for him, but big club, Celtic, big expectation, big jump, I suppose, going from Norwich to Celtic. And even Brendan Rodgers and the club itself weren't in a great place, and there was probably a bit of pressure on them as well, which fed into Adam obviously trying to prove himself. But they got over the line, obviously the Rangers game at the weekend as well, Marie, and of course they got over the line last night against Kilmarnock. Brilliant scenes, brilliant for him. And it'll be interesting to see what happens now. Like, you know, will he go back to Norwich? Will he go permanent to Celtic? I'm not sure. So, but it was brilliant for him, and I think for Brendan Rodgers as well. I've always rated Brendan Rodgers. It's a funny one. Like, I rated him really highly, really highly. And when he went back to Celtic, people, I think a lot of Celtic fans were really, like, really hurt. I know one Celtic fan in particular who, he's a colleague of ours, and he is from Scotland, and he told me the, basically the background of it, and that time that when Rodgers jumped ship, if you like.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain to him, I thought it was the right thing, because he was going to Leicester, where he was trying to get in before the end of the season, assess what's going on, and then see what he needs for obviously next season. And the answer I got was emphatic, that no way should he have left, no way do you walk out in Celtic the way he did. And I think it took him a long time when he come back for fans to get over that. And I feel now, obviously, with them winning the league, they've gotten over it. But I'd say that's why it was a tough time for Rodgers as well.
I liked him until I watched the documentary he did when he was
Liverpool.
Yeah, I just didn't think he came across that well in it. And I maybe it was just the editing, and I'd say he probably regrets doing it now. But yeah, I didn't think it did a lot for his credibility.
Isn't it amazing with them things, Marie? And obviously, you're involved in stuff like that heavily with documentaries or whatever. Isn't it amazing how, however people perceive that documentary to be, can sway a judgment and an opinion?
Yeah, whereas you love Arteta.
Arteta completely swayed me. I was so kind of not convinced at all about Arteta, not. And I watched that, and he was unbelievable in it. Unbelievable.
I hope there's somebody making a documentary on this League of Ireland season, because that would be absolutely gold. Box office with everything that's happening. I'll just on before we finish up on football, the Women's Super League title race is going to end this weekend. So Chelsea are in the driving seat, the final day showdown with Man City. Both of them are level on points. Chelsea have a better goal difference, but probably have a harder game. But it's finishing absolutely brilliant. So much excitement, so much drama. The Emma Hayes factor, the players, a bit of attrition between them. There's just so much in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Great drama, Emery. And when you think of, obviously, Man City were in a driving seat only a couple of weeks back. Bonnie Shaw gets injured as well, which was a massive blow. She was banging in goals for them all season. And then to turn the goal difference around with the huge win that Chelsea had. And now they're in the driving seat with the two goals extra, if you like. Yeah. But both are playing away from home, tough games. Obviously, Chelsea away to Man United, Man City are away to Aston Villa. The United one is a harder game. You'd expect City to get the job done, but I probably think Chelsea will get the job done as well, Marie.
Yeah, I watched they did a bit of a goodbye for Emma Hayes after one of the games, and she was brought into the middle of the pitch and did an interview. And for a while there was talk that Chelsea were going to win a quadruple, and obviously that all fell away. And the players now do seem to want to send her away with something. And I just thought that night, the way she spoke, she was quite emphatic on the fact that she wants them to win a league, and she just seemed to put the fire up again, people again. For a while it had all gone a bit flat, but I think they're back now again with a bit of bite, and they seem to understand that, like, this is the end for her. They want to give her something on the way out. She's not everybody's cup of tea. She can be a difficult character, but look, I think, like, so what? Like,
my mind has been swayed on her as well. I thought she was the best thing since sliced bread, especially for women's football and everything that she was doing, in terms of being that kind of almost.
She's tough, like.
She is tough, and I've no issue with that. You don't be at the elite level unless you're tough. I've no problem with that. But I just think a couple of the little incidents that have happened recently, and she's doubled down on them. The one pushing the manager, I didn't like it at all, Marie.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
I didn't like it at all.
What I like, though, Al, is that we don't often get to see tough women on telly, tough women in high-powered positions. And the fact that she is able to be herself and be able to be that person, and okay, some of the things she went a little bit too far, I just think it's good that we're able to see different types of women, different types of role model, and that you can be ruthless, you can be tough, you can be successful, you can be a football manager, and she's all of those things, and she's a winner. And look, not everyone's going to like her, and I just like that we get to see her.
And they were all the reasons I loved her in the first place, Marie. But you can't have it both ways, especially if you step out of line, and she definitely stepped out of line a couple of times towards the end of the season. But in terms of what she has done building the game and building herself and the success, she's been absolutely phenomenal. That's why she's getting the USA job, which is probably the best job in women's football. Would you agree?
Absolutely, it's massive.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, like the
sport. And another thing on that as well, and I'm glad you brought up the speech thing at the end with Chelsea, because Ten Hag's won last night. I don't like them, Marie. How cringy are they?
Yeah, but she's leaving.
Well, that's fine.
You know what I mean? She's leaving after the club.
And if they've won something, but Ten Hag's out on the pitch last night, and I'm like, someone take the microphone off the poor fella.
I didn't like that one. Al, before we're going to finish up, we've two things to get through first, but Liam Scales, we're talking about Celtic as well, we have to give him a mention.
Oh, Scales been unbelievable. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. But I always felt with Scales that he would go on to have a great career, not only because of his ability, because of brilliant attitude as well, Marie. And I remember watching him at UCD across in Belfield many times and always thinking there's definitely a player in this fella. When he went to Shamrock Rovers, he stepped it up another level. And to be fair to him, it wasn't all great for him at Celtic either when they loaned him out, and he's down the pecking order. And it just goes to show that when you get your opportunity, you grasp it and take it.
Yeah.
And he did that. And now he's top of the pile there at Celtic, and he's had a brilliant season. Obviously with him being successful and winning the league as well. I don't know him personally, but from what I've heard, he's a great lad, so I'm delighted for him.
Yeah, seems really solid as well. So the championship playoffs, the semi-finals, we had two at the weekend, no goals. So tonight's one is Leeds and Norwich, of course, nil all on aggregate after that one, after last weekend, and then you've Southampton and West Brom tomorrow night. But just on Leeds, Al, one of your clubs?
Yeah, massive night. Like, when you think of the opportunity, anytime I speak to anyone at Leeds, they're a Premier Division club, Marie. Like, you'll see the fan base tonight, the support. Ellen Road will be absolutely bouncing, and it'd be great to see them back. But just because people believe or you have a big fan base doesn't entitle you to be in that Premier League. You have to earn it. And they blew the end of the season. I think they lost four of their last six, Marie. Like, a dreadful run. Now, they have obviously the second chance in the playoffs. I think that was a good result away from home, because Norwich at home and Carr Road are very, very good. So to hold them to a nil all, I think it was good, because Norwich, more often than not, I would say 90% of the time they score at Carr Road, they're very good. So to keep a clean sheet at home, but you have to get the job done tonight. And I think they will. I think they'll beat Norwich, because as I say, Ellen Road will be bouncing tonight.
And what about tomorrow's one, Southampton and West Brom?
That's tougher to call. Southampton were flying high for so long, but West Brom probably had the stronger finish to the season. Southampton.
And who's going to win? Well, Rod, who's going to win the Premier League?
The Premier League?
Yeah.
Well, I've said Arsenal all year.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking you.
I'm still waiting for that twist.
This is your last opportunity now, Al. All year you've said Arsenal. We're one day away.
I'm
giving you the chance.
Oh, no, well, I'd never change my mind. I said Arsenal, but the chances are now are very slim. Spurs the other night, Marie. What did you think of the Spurs fans? They were a disgrace the other night.
When you think about where they were at the start of the season, and the stadium was like a nightclub, and everyone was so positive, and it was this party atmosphere. Well, and then
I've had this argument all week with people, and my take on it is that Spurs still had a chance for Champions League. If Spurs were 14th, I would have no problem whatsoever with them not wanting Arsenal to win the league. But they still had a chance and an opportunity. Postecoglou has come in and he's trying to instill this belief and mentality that they want to win things, get away from the Spursy chat. And then all his fans just feed back into that Spursy chat by singing and chanting all about Arsenal. It was so, like, small town mentality. Yeah. It was horrendous.
It's changed so much in a few months, and especially for Postecoglou. Do you think he wants out?
Well, he was fuming. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him, Marie. I don't think he could get his head around the fact that the fans were...
He couldn't
get
his head around the fact. He just couldn't.
He couldn't understand it. And I'm with him 100%. Yeah. Only because they still had a great chance. And they could have beat City the other night. They played great. And what annoyed me more is the players were brilliant the other night. Yeah. Like, people were questioning, oh, what would they be like? Players were brilliant, professional. It was the ones in the crowd that let them down.
Okay, Al, thank you for that. And you might stay with us. Sure, look, we're going to go back to the golf as well. So I need you to keep an eye on the golf till we talk to Greg again. And Bernard Jackman is up next. But the one I'm looking forward to most is Jeff Shepherd, who is going to indulge me in my new obsession, which is the women's NBA.
Game on. Rugby.
Now we're going to turn our attention to rugby. Bernard Jackman is with me in studio. Bernard, we're going to get on to the ORC games in just a minute, but there's a bit of business going on off the field. Connacht in particular have announced quite a number of departures.
Yeah, they have, and Ulster as well. But Connacht, I suppose today, we knew Tiernan O'Halloran was going to retire. We knew that Dermot Kilgallen was moving to Munster. I think the big surprise was Jared Butler, the former captain, Centurion there. He's not being renewed. Tom Farrell is going to Ulster. That rumour was out. But then, there's other players, Dominic Robertson-McCoy, Tom Daly, very good centre, has played a lot of rugby, Gavin Thornbury, Matthew Burke, Orr McNulty, Ty McElroy and Michael McDonald. So Pete Wilkins, the Connacht coach, said that they're going to run with a smaller squad next year because it's not a World Cup year, and try and get that balance right between experienced players and academy players. They've signed Ben Murphy and Temi Lassie from Leinster, who would be that kind of young players looking for a chance. But I'd say the Connacht fans are worried about the quality of their makeup for next year, because they're certainly losing a lot of experience and haven't named who's going to come in to replace him yet. And they don't have a huge amount of flexibility with non-Irish qualified, so it probably will just be a smaller squad, and try and get that balance right to mind them throughout the season.
And would, I know there's quite a number of them, 11 in total. Yeah. Would all of them have options?
No, the market is horrendous at the moment. I've never had as many players ring me asking me, can I ring X club or Y, or do I know anyone looking for a loose head prop, etc. It always is very hard the year after World Cup, because a lot of clubs will have signed World Cup jokers, and so players who cover for them when they lose international. So, and some of them do well, and that puts a squeeze on. But no, the market is incredibly hard. So I would say some of those players would be looking at retirement and transitioning into other jobs, or maybe going to, even like people think, oh, I can go to Pro D2 in France. It's actually very, very difficult to get in there now. So probably the next stop for someone who want to keep playing professionally would be the MLR in America. But even there, it's getting tight on non-American qualified players.
What about Ulster?
Yeah, so Ulster, obviously, we've known that Dan McFarlane was trying to cut a million off the budget minimum, and they've Luke Marshall retired, Billy Burns gone to Munster, Greg Jones, Will Addison, Angus Curtis, Stephen Kitshoff, Dave Ewers, James France and Shea O'Brien all released. You know, quick maths on that, I think that's about 1.5 or 6 million of salary, which would probably give Richie, hopefully, some, Richie Murphy, who's been announced as head coach, a chance to reinforce his squad, because again, you know, there's some player, well, Addison in particular, I know he's only played 41 times for Ulster, he's been had a lot of injuries, but when he plays, he's exceptional. Was brilliant last week against the Scarlets at 13, plays fullback as well. Kitshoff, obviously World Cup winner, out the door. So it's just a sign of the times financially that our provinces are, or sorry, some of our provinces are having to cut corners.
Something the operative word. What does that mean then for young players that are coming out of school, college, want to be professional? Are the academy contracts then quite similar, that the options aren't there?
Yeah, look at, ordinarily, if they back you to go into the academy, you ordinarily get 3 years. You know, it's a 3-year type program, and at the end of that, then obviously you're hoping to get signed up on a senior contract. There's no guarantee you'll get those 3 years, but it's really important to combine study or trades or whatever alongside that, because I think the life of a professional player has never been more fickle. Obviously, there's huge opportunities for the top players, and they're still going to do very well out of it, but it's just, I think, really, even Ireland, which was nearly seen as being recession proof for players, it's starting to feel the effect of the worldwide squeeze on talent.
Yeah, it's a tough time now then for rugby players, unless you're in situ in a contract. So this weekend, big weekend for the URC team. Since we were talking about Connacht, let's talk about their game. It's pretty much a must-win game for them. They are taking on the DHL Stormers. Do you think they're going to be able to put in a performance, just given how difficult the Toma Park experience was for them last weekend?
Look, it's their team will perform on emotion, and potentially the fact that it's going to be the farewell to those players we mentioned may get a performance out of them, certainly on form, and the evidence of how they played in Toma Park. They've no right to expect to beat the Stormers, who are coming fully loaded. But this is the frustrating thing about Connacht. When they actually are emotionally up for it, they actually can surprise you. But on form, no, it'll be a big ask. And like, they play Leinster in the final round away from home, so they probably need to get 5 points out of this to make the playoffs and to make Champions Cup rugby next year. And it can happen, but certainly you wouldn't be putting your house on.
And if it doesn't, Bernard?
Do you know what, Marie? I actually think they're better off not being in the Champions Cup. I think look at the players we just mentioned who are leaving. You look at this year, how the 4 Champions Cup games, you know, didn't do anything for them in terms of the league. They're in a stressful situation. I don't think they have the squad to be in the Champions Cup, and I think a year in a Challenge Cup would allow them to mind those senior players, blood more young players, and there is a lot of good young talent in Connacht, so that's a positive. And maybe the coaches will be more likely to pick them in the Challenge Cup in those games, and they'll get more experience, and you'll find 2 or 3, you know, gems that can actually go and become senior players for Connacht. And then obviously, because you're not playing Champions Cup, you'll come back into the URC the week after, you know, a bit more rested, ready to maybe get a win that you wouldn't get if you're in the Champions Cup. So the only problem is they're trying to build a new stadium, and it's hard to get season ticket holders to put their hand in their pocket when they're not getting the likes of Bordeaux or, you know, a Leicester, etc., you know, to as part of their package. But
players want to play in the Champions League.
Yeah, and there's also, when it comes to recruitment and retention, you know, a Mac Hansen type, next time he's off contract, you know, he may say, oh, I want to be a Champions Cup player. I'm just using him as an example.
It's like Liverpool in the Europa League.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, it's the same. And it is a factor. So it's a very big risk to say, oh, Connacht would never say they don't want to be in it, but just looking at where they are at this moment, I don't think it would be a bad thing.
So Ulster and Leinster, and the talk anyway, Bernard, you'd know a lot more than I about all of this sort of stuff, is that they might display their Champions Cup game plan in this game, Leinster, that is. What do you think?
A little bit of it, I think, yeah. Like, they want to put in a big performance. Toulouse have been very impressive, and there's no doubt Leinster are looking at that. Now, Leinster obviously had a big result at the weekend, and putting 60 points on Ospreys, but it was interesting, Neil Cullen saying it was far from perfect, you know, and they scored 60. There wasn't a huge amount wrong with it, to be fair. I just think selection-wise, it's going to be really interesting. Cullen has said they're going to go fairly strong all the games for the rest of the season. He did go strong against the Ospreys, but I think he may keep likes of Tadhg Furlong back off the bench at least. But because they slipped up and didn't get anything in South Africa, they've now got themselves in a situation where they're second in the table and they need Glasgow to drop points to get back to first, which will obviously give them home advantage if they go all the way through. But they also need to win. And you just wonder with Ulster, could they kind of pull something out of the bag? They've been getting, their performance haven't been brilliant, but the certainty and clarity they now have with Richie Murphy being named, they've been winning. You know, they may find a performance, but look, it's chalk and cheese. The game plan you need to beat Ulster is very different than what you need to beat Toulouse. So I wouldn't expect to see too much of it, but they'll be hoping for a very good performance to give them confidence.
Will there be players that might see it as an audition?
Yeah, 100%. And there'll be others who maybe will be kind of thinking, you know, what happens if I get injured here?
Yeah.
And look, they'll be able to perform. But players who say it doesn't come into your mind are lying. It does, because effectively since they lost in the Viva last year to La Rochelle in the final, they have been thinking about winning that trophy, and it's only 7 days away. Their mind will definitely be a little bit elsewhere. So it's really interesting to see how they perform.
Just in terms of personnel then, what would be an interesting selection call for you? Where would it be an interesting one?
Yeah, I think, well, for me, it's Hugh Keane and James Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, we're led to believe that they're available for selection. If they are, you'd think they need to start to get the benefit of really good game time. Or maybe Leo will say, well, no, 30 minutes off the bench would be enough for them. But them getting game time and getting through it, I think, would be massive for Leinster. Leinster are going to need 23 players to beat Toulouse. So they're the ones I'm probably looking at, waiting for the team announcement most eagerly to see, have they made it and are they going to start their bench?
Munster and Edinburgh is on tomorrow evening. Munster on a bit of a URC charge?
Yeah, Munster have been brilliant. They've really picked things up, but they toured incredibly well, as they often do. Got 10 points from South Africa, came back and put Connacht to the sword. It's their title. They have a gap week next weekend. Obviously, they're not in the Champions Cup final. And they'll just take that and build again then for the playoffs. I think they were brilliant away from home last year in the run-in, won an away quarterfinal, semi-final, final. But realistically, you know, from a financial point of view, from giving yourself the best possible chance of winning, you're much better off being at home. So they need to win in Edinburgh. And they'll be hoping that Leinster or Glasgow slip up and they could even potentially get that top spot, which would give them a home final, which could be in Páirc Uí Chaoimh.
So, as we stand now, who's your favourite for the URC?
It's Munster or Leinster, you know. Leinster, if they can deal with either winning the Champions Cup or the hangover of it. Glasgow are the top team, so it sounds stupid not to say they're the best, but I do think Munster would be able to beat them in a once-off knockout game. And maybe beat Leinster if they're not fully tuned in.
Okay, Bernard Jackman, thank you as always for coming into studio. We will talk to you again soon. Enjoy the weekend of rugby.
Thank you.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, I'm delighted to say that Jeff Shepherd joins us to talk all things American sport. And Shep, there's only one place to start. I have a new obsession, and it is the women's NBA. We can thank Caitlin Clark for that, for making the sport a viral sensation, but is just really reached new heights in terms of interest, anticipation. The season has begun. What's it been like over there, Shep?
So, you know, Marie, this is really interesting. I think the best correlation that you can kind of have with what's happening with this, and look, Caitlin Clark, obviously, as we've talked about, it was phenomenal, and we've talked about the impact she's had. But it wasn't just her. You know, it was Manchu and all those players at South Carolina, and, you know, Connecticut's, you know, got a bunch of great players too. Correlation that I kind of have thought about is it's not the same thing, but it's kind of like the way you have college football. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your team, but you're also aware of like the best players around in college football. And so, you know, if that person comes to your team, you know, to your favorite pro team, or they go on, you just kind of have this name recognition. There are so many women that have been playing in college basketball, let's say the last 3 or 4 years, that have really kind of, you know, with the NIL stuff, You know, they've just kind of elevated the consciousness of women's basketball to a level that, frankly, I mean, I just don't know if we've ever had it in America. And it has started to kind of continue that way with them starting in the WNBA. For example, I mean, I was talking to my father this morning, and he was on, you know, on the phone. He lives in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where LSU is. And he said, oh, I got to check the score. You know, I want to check the box score last night and see how Angel Reese did. You know, yeah. This is not a sentence to me before in the history of our relationship, you know? So, I mean, yes, it's Caitlin Clark, but it's these other women that are playing as well. And look, Marie, you may not have even heard this. This just was announced this morning over here. When Clark's Indiana Fever team go play in Atlanta, they're moving the games from the regular stadium that Atlanta's team plays in to where the Atlanta Hawks play the NBA. Because they're anticipating that many ticket sales. So they're going to basically go from about a 3,500-seat gym to a, you know, an arena that seats $14,000 or $15,000. I don't know what else needs to be said with regards to the popularity of the sport when teams are making decisions like that. They know that they can sell the tickets, and so they're going to go ahead and do it. I just think that's a testament to kind of where we are right now.
Yeah, it's really taken off, and even just the glitz and the glamour that's surrounding it as well, like the outfits before the games the last couple of nights, it's kind of transcending sports a little bit and going into this, to the pop culture side of society as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you've got, you know, you've always had, you know, young girls looking up to these players, but I think now, again, it's just, you know, they're celebrities, they're professional athletes. But with the social media, the way they use it, you're just more, you have more access to these players, you know, than I think they've had in years past. You know, Caitlin Clark's been in, you know, national State Farm insurance commercials, you know, so she's just in your living room a lot more than, you know, other female athletes have been, you know, outside of the women's national soccer team. I just don't know if there's been a reaction like this to women's sports in America, and you know they're looking to capitalize on it right now.
I haven't got a team yet, Shep. I'm thinking Chicago Sky, because Chicago's not that far away. Well, it's not as far away as other places, so it's somewhere I could realistically go to watch a game. What you reckon?
I mean, you know, the New York and the Liberty, I mean, they're right there. I mean, that's, you know, that's a 5-hour flight, you know. You know, Connecticut,
like,
also
Reese?
Got a team there. Yes. Oh, I mean, of course you should. She went to LSU. Of course you should like her. But, you know, you've got New York and with the Liberty, and you got the Connecticut team right there, Sun, you know, and they're close to each other. So, I mean, you could catch, like, back-to-back games, things like that. So it's just, you know, it's just there's a lot going on, and there's just a ton of excitement right now about, you know, the start of this season.
So tell me about the NFL then. We'll jump to a different code. They have confirmed the games they're going to be on in London, Munich and Brazil. Any really exciting ones?
Well, I mean, I think just the season opener in general, Marie, I mean, they just announced the schedule. And so the season opener, you know, you've got Baltimore and Kansas City, a rematch of the AFC game. You know, Patrick Mahomes in prime time. Who doesn't want to watch that? There's going to be a bunch of games on Christmas. You've got a game during, you know, Oktoberfest in Germany. It's just going to be fantastic. They're going to play down in Brazil. We've talked about kind of this ever-expanding, you know, campaign for the NFL to play in London and Munich. They've played in Mexico City. Now they're really going to go into South America and play it. And I would assume that's going to be an incredibly attended game with a wonderful atmosphere.
Absolutely. Have you any plans, Shep, to come over our way?
Well, I will actually be in Ireland at the end of this year, Marie, and we can talk about that later as we get closer to that trip.
So you're coming into the studio to us?
Well, it'll be that week between Christmas and New Year's. I don't know how many people will be around. You never know. Ronan might toss me the keys and just let me go wild.
You take over the show for that week, Shep. That sounds like a brilliant plan.
That's right.
Fantastic, Shep. Yeah. As always, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to very quickly go back to the golf to Greg Allen at Valhalla. Greg, how are things going?
Yeah, well, I was reporting it just earlier on in the programme of that major championship record equaling round of 62 by Xander Schauffele. It's still got the lead by three strokes, that 62, because he's 9 under par. Tony Finau, with two holes to play, is 6 under. But Rory McIlroy has completed his round, a round of 66, 5 under par. There was some pretty wayward driving in that round, but there was some really, really good wedge play. And that's almost the direct opposite of what we know from McIlroy over the years. But he's got himself underway here with a 66, tied for third place with Bob McIntyre of Scotland, 5 under par, 3 behind Xander Schauffele. Shane Lowry has just opened with a bogey on the first. Paddy Carrington tees off in just under an hour.
Good stuff, Greg. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow. That is it from us for this evening. Alan Colley, thank you so much for coming in. I'll be back tomorrow previewing all of the weekend's sport and, of course, talking to Greg at the golf as well.